Good morning. What I'd like to do this morning is talk about some regulatory issues and rate design as well as incentives in the rate making process associated with energy efficiency. And some of the things I'm going to talk about today are going to be focused primarily on local distribution companies and the natural gas business as opposed to electricity, even though a number of these issues I think can be generalized into the power industry as well. And in fact, a lot of my discussion today is going to be talking about revenue neutrality programs, particularly revenue decoupling. And for many of you, you're probably familiar with a lot of these ideas because they've been done, say, 10, 15, 18 years ago in the power industry, so they're really not a lot of new ideas, just some that I think have been dusted off and brought back again. Something like the other day, it's kind of interesting now that a lot of the things that I'm doing today are very similar to the things I started doing 18, 19 years ago in terms of nuclear power and energy efficiency, and we're looking at those issues again. Decoupling happens to be one of those as well. I think the unique twist on it now is that you're seeing a lot of the gas industry looking at these issues. You see gas looking at energy efficiency programs in and of themselves. And it certainly has raised a lot of different issues, I think, relative to the power industry, different usage trend issues with the natural gas industry versus the power industry. Some of those charts y'all saw yesterday from Florida Power and Light, a lot of different trends as opposed to those growing trends in the power industry. And I'm going to talk about some of those as well. Also, I work pretty closely with a number of consumer groups, particularly attorney generals and consumer councils around the country. And so a lot of the issues I'm going to talk about today are going to be from those consumer perspectives. There are a number of papers that are out there on revenue neutrality, decoupling, straight fixed variable rate design. A lot of them will take the approach of, you know, putting this forward as a relatively straightforward mechanism for eliminating disincentives for energy efficiency. And they're all, there's a recent paper by NRRI that was done by Kent Costello that's regularly cited. I think Bob Rainier actually did the first one back in the early 90s on this for the power industry. Those are all good papers to look at and get kind of the positive side. What I'm going to talk about today are some of the more negative implications, maybe some of the concerns that these attorney generals and consumer advocates have in other states, and one of the reasons why this hasn't been quite as pervasive a policy initiative as one might expect. But before talking about that, I think it's important to think about why are we looking at energy efficiency, and these are some common themes that I think go beyond just the gas industry and also address the power industry as well. You've got high natural gas prices right now, a lot of volatility. That certainly creates a problem for gas utilities in terms of securing natural gas supplies for their retail customers, which tend to be mostly your residential and commercial customers. A lot of your, depending on what state you're in, a lot of your industrial, your large commercials, your industrial customers may be interconnected directly in the pipeline. So you may have a lot at the LDC level, residential and commercial sales mix. In the power industry, you see gas impacting power more significantly at the margin. You've got changing usage patterns, both in the power industry. You saw yesterday growing customers, growing number of sales, growing use per customer in the power industry as more and more of our economy becomes kind of electronic, more digital, more computer applications, higher intensity use. Different patterns, though, and greater efficiencies in the natural gas industry. I'm going to show you some charts about that, actually declining use per customer. The emerging need for baseload capacity, that's a big issue for the power industry, but you also see considerable issues in the natural gas industry with pipeline replacement costs, the need to go out and start replacing a lot of bare steel that's out in the ground, corroded pipe, upgrading a lot of that infrastructure, new compression. So another thing driving a lot of the rate cases that you saw yesterday that Dan Ford was talking about. That's true in the power industry. We're seeing a lot of rate cases in the natural gas business as well. And when companies are coming in for these rate cases, they're talking about mechanisms like revenue decoupling, like changes and modifications in rate design to not only, I think, change the incentive structure associated with demand-side management programs or energy efficiency, but some overarching issues associated with the changing usage patterns as well as some uncertainty and risk that they face as well. There's a regulatory need to do something soon. A lot of regulators get calls, staff members get calls by their customers that don't understand their bills, why they're increasing so much. Particularly true with the natural gas business, which is functionally separated. A little confusion about what role the LDC plays in these natural gas markets and how they really don't control a lot of those prices, that those are prices that are just passed on from the upstream portion of the market, so that's a big concern for LDCs as well. And obviously, as you heard this morning, increasing environmental concerns and this perceived long-run fossil fuel price risk issue, peak oil theory, limited natural gas supplies, all of these are factors, I think, that are stimulating a lot of states, you know, looking at energy efficiency more aggressively on a forward-going basis. So having done that, having said that, what are some of the perceived disincentive issues for utilities, particularly based on the way utility services are priced right now, and particularly in the natural gas business. There's a perception right now that these rate design practices send the wrong signals to utilities about how they should be selling their services. Rates right now are tied to sales. The more sales you make, the more revenues you make. The more of those revenues you have, holding those costs constant, the greater the perceived impact on profitability. And when you have that profit incentive that's tied into making those sales, the perception is there's a very strong disincentive for you to go in and promote energy efficiency, because by doing so, you're essentially promoting less and less of your product, not more and more of that product. So many utilities, particularly in the gas industry now, would like to see their sales or their revenues or their margins decoupled from sales and actually put those on a more levelized or even fixed basis. One of the problems now is just kind of the nature, the basic nature of how we look at rate design for local distribution companies. If you think about it, you've got what we refer to as a two-part tariff. You have a fixed customer charge, and then you have a variable charge, and this is, again, a non-fuel-based rate that's associated with the services that you charge those customers. Those variable rates are charged usually even on the electric industry on a kWh basis, or they could be on a volumetric basis for the LDC. It's often referred to as a nonlinear tariff in the academic literature. When you look at the optimal ways of designing tariffs here, you'll see a lot of literature in nonlinear tariffs, and that essentially means is those average prices are decreasing as you wind up increasing your volume and your sales. And some of these ideas are not new. They're not real big innovations in rate design. They go back into the last century in some of the academic literature. If you look at Alfred Kahn's textbook on regulation, he cites it as being adopted in the utility industry as part of as early as the 20th century here. So certainly a long, consistent rate design structure and approach, and one for which a lot of LDCs would like to see some changes. They think it's time. We've had this for about close to 100 years. The theme of this conference is looking at the past 100 years and what we're going to do for the future. You know, is it time to start thinking about rate design a little bit more innovatively? Is it time to start thinking about changing and moving away from this two-part structure into something that's going to be a little bit more dynamic that promotes energy efficiency? So just to kind of give you some ideas of what we're looking at in terms of rate designs and how they're kind of configured, and this probably won't come as big surprise to everybody. In the left-hand side and the right-hand side on the top of the charts here are kind of your two extremes between prices. You can have a completely fixed rate charge on the left-hand side there where you're charging just a fixed customer charge. And something like that would be akin to a straight fixed variable proposal that you see many local distribution companies looking at now, where they'll eliminate the distribution, kind of the base rate distribution charge on a volumetric basis, and increase that all and put it into that fixed customer charge on a per monthly basis. The other extreme is all the way on the other side there, and that is where you're charging essentially a fixed rate for every unit that you do on a variable basis. You're not covering anything in that fixed charge. And again, this goes not only, I think it has implications, we're going to talk about energy today, but you have some issues with this related to the water industry probably as well. You also have these various different rate block structures here that we see that are variations of the two-part tariff. You may have a customer charge and a declining block rate, where you go through different blocks and the rates decrease as you move more to kind of encourage more consumption if you're trying to get those economies of scale and move the consumption out. You saw a lot of this in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s as you were kind of expanding the utility system, a lot of declining block rates. As we moved into the 70s, though, you saw a lot of trends moving towards inverted block rates or inclining block rates where you actually got charged more given the more usage that you had. You had a fixed customer charge, you had a basic service rate, and those rates would increase as you wound up using more and more natural gas or even more electricity. Then on the left-hand side, you can see a variation off declining block rates there, two different structures, but they could be seasonally differentiated, or they could be differentiated by time of the day, during peak or off-peak, summer or winter, various different approaches to staggering those rates. The important thing to keep in mind is even though they're increasing or decreasing, they're still tied to the volumes of sales that you're actually making at that time. And again, if your profitability is tied to those sales, there's a perceived disincentive for trying to move forward and promoting energy efficiency that would kind of move you back in terms of that profitability. So what are some of the common approaches and some of the common themes in terms of looking at revenue neutrality? When I talk about revenue neutrality, I'm talking broadly. It can be a bunch of different programs. Straight fixed variable rate design is one of those where you're essentially eliminating those distribution charges on a volumetric basis and you're having one fixed customer charge. You could have sales revenue decoupling where you're essentially looking at a fixed revenue per customer basis and you're trying to recover on that fixed revenue per customer basis, if you're over on any given month, you'll credit those back to ratepayers through a crediting account mechanism that could be done monthly, could be done every 2 months, could be done every 6 months or every year, depending on what you're proposing. If you are under-collecting, then you'll have a surcharge to customer bills to make up for the amount that you lost in those lost revenues. So if you're promoting energy efficiency very aggressively and you're very successful at it and you're losing revenues, you'll be able to make those up, at least on those distribution charges, to cover those fixed costs associated with the distribution system on a forward-going basis, and you'll have to wait and incur the financial costs associated with that and maybe come in for a rate case. Sales margin decoupling is another variation off of this idea that was essentially rather than total revenues, you'd be tying the margins at the LDC level, your gross margins. And then the last one is lost revenues, which is an approach that I put in here as a revenue neutrality program because it's a common approach at making utilities whole for lost sales that they have associated with energy efficiency. But as I'll talk about a little bit later, it's a much more targeted, much more isolated approach at doing that. It would be programmed. In many states, it's usually program-specific, if not at least overall plan-specific to those programs. This is a chart that will give you an idea of kind of what's going on right now with regards to revenue neutrality, particularly revenue decoupling in particular. Again, the motivations for looking at a lot of these issues now tend to be centered around the natural gas industry. The electric industry have done these things. There are a number of states that had these programs in place. Florida actually experimented with these back in the mid-90s. I think Progress Energy had a plan in place for about 3 years, and it's not in place anymore. Maine had one in the early 90s. It's not around anymore. Washington State has pulled back on some for the electric industry. But a lot of stimulation for looking at this now is primarily on the natural gas industry. A couple of things to think about when looking at the chart is who's doing it, and the way I put this together is to look at who's doing both energy efficiency as well as decoupling. Is it a fact that you need decoupling in order to have a successful energy efficiency program on the gas side? And what you'll see is there are a number of states there that actually have very aggressive or extensive energy efficiency programs but do not have revenue decoupling right now. You have a number that there's about 13 states right now that have these programs have energy efficient programs that are not decoupled. You've got about 5 states that had decoupling recently that have been proposed but have actually been rejected, or at least on one occasion. Washington State has a couple of programs that have decoupling, but they just recently rejected it for one of their LDCs there. You've got a number of states that are still looking at this right now. Idaho has still got some things pending. I think New York does too. And then you've got a number of other states that have decoupling approved, probably about 6 of those right now. North Carolina has adopted it, but it's a capped program at only 50% of the revenues. Utah's got one that's in place for a year period. It's going to be evaluated at the end of the year, and then it will be, if the commission wants to move forward, it'll go for its other 2-year period. In most of these states, with the exception of California and the light blue that have adopted them, they've tended to be adopted on a pilot program basis, usually for about a 3-year period, so they'll be reviewed in another 3 years at the end of that pilot program. So these are not permanent programs at the current state, with the exception of probably California. Then you've got a number of states that have looked at straight fixed variable. This would be taking your distribution charges and putting them all in the customer charge as another way of removing that disincentive. And you see there's probably about 2 states right now that are looking at that, that have their adopted right now. Atlanta is probably one of the more infamous examples. They've had it in place for quite a while. There was legislation that helped create that for straight fixed variable. Atlanta Gas Light has had that for quite a while. You've got a number of states that have looked at straight fixed variable in some form or another, but have recognized the need to start putting more of those costs and making greater allocations into the fixed customer charge, but not necessarily going all the way with adopting straight fixed variable. You've got a number of those that have actually rejected it, and then you've got one right now, Chattanooga Gas, that has a pending application, which is an AGL subsidiary that's looking at it in Tennessee right now. What are some of the arguments in favor of looking at revenue neutrality? The argument is that it will align the utility incentives with developing energy efficiency. For the gas industry, it goes a little bit beyond that. And I think this is one of the problems and the challenges of getting these ideas approved is that it does so much more than just address energy efficiency issue, and that creates both concerns and cautions from consumer groups and from regulators as well. A lot of these utilities have been trying to use these mechanisms as well to assist in their earning their authorized rate of return. And it's not that that's necessarily a bad thing, but to what extent are you having challenges in earning your authorized rate of return? Is it really a use per customer problem and a revenue problem, or is it a cost problem? And if it's a cost problem, how does that relate to energy efficiency, and are we looking at the right question right now? I think one of the things I'll show you in a little bit is a lot of these states that have been seeing some of these big decreases in use per customer because of the big efficiency gains tend to be some of these states that are growing real fast and have a lot of new residential construction and a lot of efficiency gains in those states, particularly out west. It's easier for customers to understand, and it reduces bill volatility. That's another reason for doing this. It's just primarily associated with straight fixed variable. Obviously, if you just have one charge, it's a lot easier to understand than an inclining or declining block rate. And then the other thing is that you often hear discussed is that it reduces regulatory costs and the need for frequent rate cases. So those are some of the main reasons for doing that. Now, some of the reasons for not doing that you've seen argued, and these have been pretty passionate arguments and pretty extensive debates, has to do with the fact that it's a significant departure, I think, from traditional rate regulation, where traditionally we have set rates, we have for periods of time. You have regulatory lag between that period for utilities to garner those efficiencies if they can, and if they can't, they have the opportunity to come in and seek rate relief to change their rates. This would change rates essentially on a year-to-year basis, truing up for things that had occurred in the past and, in many instances, do not reflect a wide range of changes that may be occurring in the utility's cost structure. It's only looking at revenues and not necessarily looking at some of the other issues. So that's a common complaint that you see. The other thing is just shifting sales risk associated with sales to customers and away from utilities. A lot of things impact sales, right? The economy, weather, prices. There are a lot of different factors that go beyond energy efficiency. I don't think anybody would disagree with the fact that utilities probably ought to be made whole for going in and getting some recovery for lost sales and going in and doing a good job for energy efficiency. But when it goes beyond that, it includes things like making up sales for decreases in the weather or for increases in the economy becomes challenging that. The other thing is really looking at the nature of the use per customer argument and what's really driving, I think, some of the changes in revenues and costs for some of these local distribution companies. I think this was discussed earlier. Another issue is that these revenue neutrality programs can remove a disincentive, but they don't necessarily create an incentive. It doesn't actually give you the incentive to go out and do this. It just removes a disincentive. But I think there's a big difference between the two that needs to be considered. There's still a lot of other things that need to be examined, I think, in terms of looking at incentives to do energy efficiency. This may be one part of it, but it certainly is not the solution, or the only solution, actually. There are current proposals now that I think also raise questions, and I'll talk about those as well, that really diminish some of the simplicity arguments, particularly for the gas side. It's not only revenue decoupling that you're seeing in a lot of these rate cases. It's weather normalization. It's riders for accelerated pipeline recovery costs. It's a whole other fact. You've lost and unaccounted for gas in the PGAs and the GCRs, rolling new trackers on unaccountables and bad debt. You start looking at all these things again and lots of trackers associated with them, and it raises a lot of questions as well. There's some proportionality issues. You're looking at changing rate design for a lot of customers, for very few that may be participating in this in the gas industry. And then there's also the argument about the sound economic policies as well as the traditional regulatory and rate-making policies in terms of doing this as well. A lot of these are, particularly with the straight fixed variable, somewhat controversial and somewhat counter to what a lot of states have been doing in rate design over the last, say, 50 to 75 years. And if that not that, it may not be a suggestion to keep that, but certainly an argument that's out there right now, particularly with many interveners in this process. I want to go through briefly a couple of these issues and just expand on them. As I mentioned before, the shift in regulatory approach, one of the big changes is that traditionally we have set those base rates and they've been fixed and on allowed rate of return. Between rate cases, these achieved rates of return can vary from those allowed. That regulatory lag is in many instances offered to provide incentives for these utilities. They have the opportunity for incentive. A lot of instead of rate making kind of plays off of these ideas that if you garner these efficiencies between rate cases, you'll have sharing mechanisms which you can go and sharing with ratepayers through this. And it's up to you to manage that sales risk as well as generate those cost efficiencies. with revenue decoupling and with some of these fixed variables, you really kind of move away from that process. You've taken, if you think about kind of your revenues less your cost, you've taken away essentially half of that equation in terms of the uncertainty. A lot of utilities may have very good understanding of their cost structure and how to reduce costs and where to find efficiencies, but they're probably as good as anybody else in doing forecasting and figuring out where sales are going to be in the next year or two. One of these types of programs would actually fix those on a forward-going basis. The other thing is these sales trends, and looking at the gas industry, which kind of are moving, unlike the power industry, where they're moving in two directions, these are moving in kind of opposite directions, or at least flat. This red line looks at the average use per customer in the gas industry, and this is a really important thing that concerns a lot of gas industry analysts right now, is this decreasing use per customer, which is completely different than what y'all saw yesterday with the power industry, which was doing this, right? Use per customer has been going down because you've seen greater household efficiencies in the gas industry. But you've also seen pretty straight slightly increasing from the early 90s, but constant probably through the mid-90s, of total use for natural gas at the residential level as well. One of the reasons for that, primarily the reason for that, is despite the fact that you've seen decreasing use per customer, you've seen a lot of growth in customers in the gas industry over the last several years, so it's kind of washed itself out. The other thing to keep in mind is kind of the decomposition of prices at the retail level for natural gas customers. You'll have your total delivered price here, that's the blue. You'll have your wellhead prices, which are here in the darker blue, and then you've got your kind of your LDC or your distribution costs there in the red. And you can see that those fuel-related costs have been increasing as a share of those total costs over time. But you've also seen some creepage there in those distribution non-gas costs as well. And you kind of look at those trends over time. This is just the percent of the commodity costs and retail rates for LDCs as a share of total. You can see in the late 70s, early 1980s, had a big pickup there, obviously, when gas prices were high relative to base rates. And we've had another pickup in recent years with those commodity increases, and this is one of the concerns that many of those LDCs have about those changes. And again, another argument is that customers have a hard time understanding the nature of those and actually generating those. But despite the fact that you've seen those changes and you've had that decreased use per customer, you've actually seen revenues per customer flat to increasing as well. So, you know, there may be some revenue arguments here, but if you look at those on an aggregate basis for the industry, they've been holding their own at least over the last several years. Again, a lot of that has to do with the fact that you've been adding a lot of customers and you've had a lot of high growth states adding those customers over time. What about the incentive issues? I alluded to this a little bit before. As I mentioned, revenue decoupling at best removes a disincentive that doesn't necessarily create an incentive. And there may be other mechanisms that you have to do to go forward from that. The other things that it addresses is things like corporate culture and the things of going out really wanting to do energy efficiency. Are you still going to have competition that is not going to get removed from something like revenue decoupling, like fuel substitution and fuel switching between LDCs and electric utilities? I don't know that revenue decoupling is going to make those things go away overnight, or the adoption of things like CHP, combined heat and power, cogeneration. And just, I think, some fundamental issues about, you know, how you wind up making money. Do you wind up making a profit, or are these just expenses that you pass through and you don't wind up making earnings on? So to the extent that there's no profitability tied to this, it certainly raises some other probably bigger incentive issues to me than it would, say, revenue decoupling. The other thing is the tracker approach. I think a lot of customer groups are tracker fatigued, as I alluded to earlier. In a lot of these rate cases, it's not just revenue decoupling. It's a lot of other things. Some LDCs actually do not have PGAs or gas cost recovery clauses in some states. In Vermont, I think they just recently put one in. A lot of those are just recovered under traditional rates. Some states out west have those types of programs, too. Many are coming in and trying to get that right now. You've got weatherization clauses, infrastructure recovery riders, changing the normalization periods, just everything but the kitchen sink getting thrown at the same time as decoupling. And I think it gives us pause for hesitation on all these types of innovation rather than kind of digesting one or two of these at a time. And I think the biggest issue, too, is that, and this is a theme that I think you see throughout the energy industry, and I think probably something you've seen in the discussion today and yesterday as well, and that is kind of the allocation of risk as the industry changes and becomes more volatile. And this is a big issue with regards to decoupling and energy efficiency. It's going to be a big issue with nuclear power. It's a big issue with anything right now in the business. How are we going to be sharing those risks out? How are we going to define those rules? How are we going to allow these utilities to recover costs associated with these energy efficiency programs on a forward-going basis that are long-lived? I mean, big questions associated with that as well. The proportionality issue is another one. A lot of times these programs, on the aggregate at least, and it's not to suggest there aren't significant savings and they're not cost-effective savings, but they have tended to be small shares of total sales for a lot of these customers, and you're talking about essentially changing the rate design for all customers when you may have 10, 20, 30% participation rates in some of these programs, or maybe on average less than a half percent of those sales. So, what trade-offs are we making in terms of a lot of these innovations relative to demand-side management issues? I won't go through all of these, but some of the issues on the sound economic principles. I think the biggest thing are the dynamics associated with this. We're certainly setting costs and rates now on what we've got in terms of embedded costs, which are on the books. But if you start thinking about this on a longer run, more forward-going basis, do these types of rate designs send the appropriate signals for conservation, at least holding other factors constant, particularly straight fixed variable, when you may be adding plan on a longer run basis and you want to continue to encourage some conservation associated with these charges? One of the common claims about this is that holding other things constant, if you put everything in the fixed customer charge, it's not necessarily going to do anything to help stimulate conservation. If anything, it makes that marginal cost of making one more additional unit of consumption, essentially there's no charge for that. So that's been another argument right now for looking at these issues. And there are a lot of other mechanisms, I think, that can be done within the regulatory approach that can be addressed that look at some of these disincentive issues or maybe some of these cost issues. You know, a lot of states use historic test years that are looking at this. Florida uses a projected test year, but if you went to a projected test year or you were in a state that has the option of looking at projected test years, you can certainly take into account those sales losses associated with demand-side management that you're anticipating on a foregoing basis. You can use various different cost-effective tests to screen out, overly large rate impacts by looking at a rate impact measure if you're really concerned about this and you want to start this on a piecemeal basis. Keep in mind, a lot of these gas utilities are just now starting demand-side management programs. They have not historically had them in place. They're really starting from scratch. I know some of the ones out west that I've had the opportunity to work on have not even had these programs in place, unlike the electric utility that's had them in for a very long time. Lost revenues is another approach, I think, that can be used. And essentially, you go in on a per-program basis, and you say, okay, after the fact, after you have adopted these programs, let me see what your participants were, what your audits were on those actual savings, and we'll go in and true those up on an actual per-program basis rather than on an aggregate basis associated with whatever those changes in sales were at that time. Rate design is another thing, a repression adjustment. You can go in and certainly go in and change, if you're on a historic test year basis, just make an adjustment into those billing determinants when you're resetting rates in one of these rate-making processes. That's one of the things that we did up in Michigan and looking at it. We just made an adjustment in the billing determinants and reset rates based on that. Direct incentive issues, I think, are important. And then more frequent rate cases. It may be a fact that we're going to have to live through this period of more frequent rate cases. And this is just one of the things that we'll have to look at. And if we're going to be doing that, then for a variety of different reasons, including a lot of the capital upgrades and capital investments that are going to be made, this is something to continue to look at in conjunction with those cases. So in conclusion, these are highly contentious issues right now. If you've ever been involved in one of these proceedings in other states, it can get pretty passionate. You've got a lot of environmental groups that get involved in this. NRDC is very active. It's signed kind of joint resolutions with the American Gas Association supporting this, which is an interesting tie-up of interest groups. It's a significant regulatory change, I think, for a lot of consumer advocates and attorney generals, and it's one that they have concerns will get unwound. That won't be easy to unwind. There are some bigger picture issues, I think. Is this something we want to use? This is an older idea. Many people in the power industry are a little familiar with this. We've been through it. We've done through it. There have been maybe some good things. I think the best-case scenario has been neutral things. I don't know if anybody's jumped up and down outside of California about it. There have actually been some negative implications in Maine when they adopted it right prior to the 92 recession. They had huge balances that had to be recovered from ratepayers, even though there were no energy efficiency. They were all associated with decreased sales from a recession. So there were some negative experiences associated with these programs. There's a growing tendency, too. I don't have this map here for actually if there are these big incentive issues with utilities delivering these energy efficiency services, should they be doing it? And you have a lot of states right now that are moving these off to third parties. Oregon has third-party administrators and developers through the Oregon Trust Fund that does this. I think Minnesota's doing it now. New Jersey does it. You have NYSERDA that's doing things like this right now in New York. So there are a lot of other states that are just saying, maybe we'll just let utilities do utility services and we'll do energy efficiency through some other venue. And again, I think lastly, there are a lot of other opportunities for addressing some of these lost revenue issues. Maybe we should start looking at some of these incremental approaches first, seeing how they work, and then maybe something like this later down the road when there are more opportunities for doing that. My email address and URL is up here if y'all want any copies of the slide directly. I'd be more than happy to provide them. I think we're going to do questions later as a channel, right? Thank you.